Commerce will now come to order at 10:07. With us today, we have Representative Gatto, Representative Booth, Representative Gardner, and myself, Chair Olson. We have several people in transit, but I don't think we're going to hold the meeting up. First bill on the agenda today is House Bill 228, Workers' Comp Medical Treatment Fees, and presenting it will be on behalf of Representative Kelly will be, are you going to do it, Mike, or?
Mr. Chairman, if we might, Derek Miller, my staff.
It'll be Derek Miller. Please join us, Derek. And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Derek Miller, and I'm staff to Representative Mike Kelly. And I'm here before you today to present House Bill 228, which is a simple, rather simple bill here. In 2005, as some of you are aware who were around back then, major rework was done regarding workers' compensation statutes in the form of Senate Bill 130 at the time. Part of that work, medical rates that medical doctors could charge were frozen at 2004 at a 2004 fee schedule. So a review could be done to address the underlying reasons for workers' compensation for the high increased cost in premiums. So they froze those rates at 2004 in hopes that a long-term fix would come to fruition. And a review was done to be jointly by a special workers' compensation legislative task force in concert with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development Medical Review Committee. They were charged with two specific tasks to design to address the underlying reasons for medical cost increases. As part of the conditions, the medical rate freeze went into effect with that bill, and they were frozen at the 2004 rates. And the task force that was charged with studying some of these increased medical costs, for some reasons or another, those recommendations didn't come forward. So now we're at the point where we're at right now, where August 1st, 2007, that medical wage freeze will expire and is set to sunset. So that is why House Bill 228 was introduced. And this bill basically extends those medical rates to March 1st, 2009. And I believe you do have a sectional analysis before you. And basically, I'll just go through the different sections here. Section 1 specifies that the fees and other charges for medical treatment provided before August 1st, 2007 do not exceed the 2004 medical rates. And those procedures after August 1st, 2007 and before March 31st, 2009 the percentage change between 2004 and 2006 for the CPI medical care component, they're adjusted between those two dates. Section 2 repeals the medical rate freeze of the 2004 rates, and Section 3 allows the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to adopt regulations necessary to implement this act, and then Sections 4 and 5 are effective date clauses. So it's a rather simple bill. It's a short-term solution to a long-term fix that we hope will again come to fruition in the coming years. And I believe we have folks online and available to testify to take any questions or concerns that may come up here as the committee debates this bill.
Well, at this point in time, I'd like to note that we've been joined by Representative Ledoux and Representative Bramra, so we're pretty much almost up to a full committee. Any questions for Derek before we Representative Gardner?
Thank you. Do we have information about how easy or how difficult it is for injured workers to get access to medical care, to find a physician who will treat them at the current rate?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, I don't have that information in front of me or available to me at this time, but I believe we have some folks in the audience that may or may not have that information and be able to respond to that question directly.
Representative Ramos.
Through the chair, I'll point out that, as is often the case with the people that I employ, although ongoing care presents a different issue, immediate care, is often emergency room care. So the workforce is initially cared for impeccably, and then in an ensuing effort to provide care for all the subsets of groups, seniors and for for those under work comp and other items as well. But, you know, many of our work comp costs originate in the emergency room where people are given primary care, you know, at the onset of whatever workplace accident befell them.
Representative Ledoux and then Representative Gatto.
Yes, I'm interested in the same question as Representative Gardner, because I know that in the area of Medicare, we've been reading quite a bit lately about people over the age of 65 who are on Medicare not being able to find a physician to handle their care because of the low rates that Medicare pays. So I'm real concerned that we have some information as to whether or not this is happening with respect to the workers' compensation rates.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, that is obviously an ongoing concern, and I don't think that I think the scope of this bill was to try to keep it as specific as possible with the medical care component on the workers' compensation rates, and with the hopes that we will address some of your concerns that you're talking about right now with Medicaid and the larger picture.
I'm not trying to fix Medicaid in this bill. I'm just trying to make sure that this bill or the previous bill didn't cause for workers the same sort of thing that has happened with Medicare.
Okay.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Whenever a person is admitted to an emergency room, the form always says, is this a work-related injury or is this work comp paid by work comp? So they're going to be charging fees. Are those fees capped?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, the fees that are currently being charged by medical doctors are capped at the 2004 medical rate fees. And what this bill does is to increase that cap between the rate of inflation, medical care component of CPI between 2004 and 2006. So yes, there is a cap, and this bill just adjusts that cap according to the rise in cost to provide those services.
And a brief follow-up, does it also adjust the hospital fees outside of the physician fees?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I'm not quite sure on that, but I think we can get some folks up here to clear that up for you.
I think in that case, we're going to move outside the room and move up to Anchorage to Jim Jordan. Are you with us, Jim?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Thank you. My name is Jim Jordan. I'm the executive director of the Alaska State Medical Association, and we have previously provided written testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I'm sure we'll probably have some later on, Jim. Sally Stubeck, Fairbanks.
Good morning. My name is Sally Stubeck, and I'm the Human Resources Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. In that role, I oversee the workers' compensation programs for both the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is supporting this bill for a couple of reasons. We were initially concerned about the sunset provisions, so we are pleased that there is legislation that was introduced to address that issue. The worst case scenario for us would be to allow the fee schedule to lapse without any consideration of its impact. We need stability in establishing costs for provider services, and an extension of the fee schedule allows for that stability. The adjustment to the schedule also seems reasonable, as it has been frozen at 2004 rates. An inflation factor is appropriate as costs have not remained stagnant for medical services during that period. However, the mechanism chosen in the language may not be available. I'm not sure that the Department of Labor has actually calculated the medical CPI for Anchorage, so you may want to take a look at that. The only part of the bill really that we have reservations about is the March 2009 sunset language. The extension basically puts us back in the same scenario that we're currently in. It just extends it. And so we would propose that consideration of a long-term solution be found so that we don't have to continue to address this issue in the future. Having said that, we are again supportive of the bill as is, because it does put us in a much better position in the interim than just having the fee schedule lapse in August. So I appreciate the time and attention that you have paid to this important issue, and appreciate the opportunity to address you this morning.
Are there any questions for Ms. Stubeck? Thank you very much, Sally. Oh, I guess we have one question, if you'll entertain it.
Sorry, it wasn't for Ms. Stubeck, it was for Mr. Jordan.
You with us, Jim?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, I am.
Will you take a question?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Actually, it's not a direct question. You said that in your capacity as Executive Director of Alaska State Medical Association, you had submitted written comments. I don't have them. Do other members of the committee have comments from him?
When did you submit them, Jim?
I believe they were hand-delivered on Friday to you, Mr. Chair.
To me or my office?
Your office.
Okay. I think we're going to take a brief at ease. In the meantime, I think we'll move on, and I notice we've got Mike Hogan online. Mike, are you here for questions only, or do you care to participate?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here really just to answer questions and just to state that my association, Alaska Physicians and Surgeons, is in general support of the bill as another stopgap measure to see if the Workers' Compensation Legislative Task Force can really take a look at and dig down into what's really driving these cost increases in the work comp system. And we just urge the committee to try to put some pressure on the insurance industry to finally produce the data so that we can actually look at where these costs are coming from. The request for the data originated back in October of 2004, and we are still waiting for it. So that's my only real comment.
Well, thank you for hanging in there with us. I think we'll move into, we have nobody else online, so we're going to move to Linda Hall in the room. Good morning, Ms. Hall.
That's my stuff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance.
Thank you.
I think you all have copies of my testimony. There's an outline and more attachments than you probably ever wanted to see, but I frequently appear before this committee and talk about statistics and what various things cost in various rankings. I decided today it might be easier to have you have a visual of those documents. I will say, to start with, that Division of Insurance supports this bill. It is obviously a bill that affects language in the Department of Labor statutes, but the actual outcome of the cost of the work comp system is what drives workers' compensation insurance premiums. I think you know the problem, the expiration of the freeze in the 2005 legislation. That freeze expires on August 1st of 2007. We need something to continue some type of a cap on medical fees, and I think this provision seems to be the most reasonable cap to do a CPI adjustment. In the attachments that I've given you, there are some graphs that show, one, number one is all states, number two is Alaska, and these graphs that are attached to my testimony. This shows the extreme increase in the medical service fees in the work comp system. From 1985 in Alaska, it's gone from 41% of the cost of the system to today 69% of the cost of the system. If we don't have some type of parameter on how much can be charged for medical fees, I think we're likely to see a dramatic increase in the system cost. That system cost drives premium cost. We have two pieces of premium cost. One are called loss costs, which, as the name suggests, what losses actually cost, physical dollars paid out. When we do a premium rate making analysis, we look at historical system costs. We use 3 years of actual system cost data, and then we do what's called trending to bring it up to date to project into the future. We then add a carrier component for expenses. So what we're talking about today is just the actual loss cost piece of a rate making. I've also included in your packet two premium rate rankings from Oregon. Oregon does a study. There are other studies, and they may vary a little bit. But in 2004, Alaska was second highest, had the second highest rates in workers' compensation in the country. Our average was $4.39 compared to California at $6.08. The most recent study is on the 2006 rates. This was just released recently, where you can see that Alaska now ranks as number one. I don't think this is a number one we ever hope to reach. Today we are shown at approximately a $5 average rate index. We now exceed California by nearly 80 cents. I've also attached as attachment number 5 a rate history going back to 1959. I would draw your attention to the last several years starting in 2002. We had in 2002 a 10.2 rate increase. The largest rate increase was in 2004. I think you all remember, 21.4%. That rate increase has slowed, and as of 2007, we did have a rate decrease. I've testified to that. We've had discussion about that in this committee. I would not presume to say that that decrease will continue. I could almost guarantee that it won't if we don't do something about medical fees. The impact of doing nothing. You have an attachments 2 pages, number 6, provided by the National Council on Compensation Insurance, which suggests that the system cost, if nothing is done, will increase somewhere between 4.5% and 5.8%. And again, and that's why I did some of the analysis to begin with. This isn't mean work comp premiums. It's just a system cost. They've also provided a projection, and it's attachment number 7, that if we pass this bill, there will still be an impact on the system, but it's a much smaller, 0.8% to 1.2%. When we have any kind of impact, that impact works its way through the work comp rates for a period of years. We have seen the rate increases, and I would urge you to pass this legislation out of committee if it's all possible. I have also attached a couple supplemental things that show a 2007 NCCI study that measure the facts on medical severity, which includes price, utilization, and that mix. One shows the increase in medical costs over the CPI index, and the other one shows how complex this issue actually is when you have to compare various types of treatment, various numbers of treatments, prices, and how that affects. This is about a 25-page study that I'd be happy to provide you if you're interested. And with that, I will end my testimony with, again, an urging you to vote favorably on this piece of legislation.
I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative Newman, and we have a full committee at this point in time. Any questions? Representative Ledoux.
Well, the problem that I've got with this is that when we went through our exercise of changing the workers' compensation law back in, 2004, or 2005, the idea was that we're supposed to be having a task force which was going to meet and come up with all of these wonderful ideas, and then we would be implementing these wonderful ideas at some point. And that doesn't seem to have happened. So now we're back here again with this kind of Band-Aid approach. And I guess I just don't feel comfortable with this. How much longer are we going to continue band-aiding this when we set a commission, a task force, into action, and it doesn't come up with anything? So that means we just continue what we've been doing? I don't know whether that's a question or a little speech.
Sounds like more of a statement, but do you care to address it, Linda?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I can't say that I disagree with your statement. I would like to see some long-term solutions. Thus far, it does not appear to me that those are forthcoming, and my concerns are immediate. I guess I could I address one part of what she didn't ask that has been brought up a number of times, and that's medical data. There has been a debate for 2.5 years about who requested what from whom and when. And I will say that I was never requested to provide information. The first I heard of it was probably 1.5 years ago, which is still a long time. There has been an issue with the type of information, who was willing to provide it, and to whom. Claims data is very sensitive. It's personal information, and the insurance companies are willing to provide information to one of two sources, me as the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, or the National Council on Compensation Insurance, the statistical agent. In December of last year, there was a meeting where there was finally a data set described of what kinds of information was being requested, what would satisfy the medical community in terms of medical information, also to put together a body of data that would give us some idea of where we have as a state areas that may be out of line or that are growing faster than other areas. That data took almost a year to actually get at what is it you really want. At that time, the National Council on Compensation has done, for lack of a better term, they've done what's called a data call. They go out to the insurance companies, they ask for the information. The insurance companies have agreed to provide it. It is a manual task. They did not keep this level of detail in the data they collect. It's a gruesome, almost manual task, going back to bill providers, bill reviewers, and actually putting together manually the kind of information we're asking them to provide. So I would suggest to you that I'm anticipating at some point, still this year, I'm not going to say when, we will have the medical data that has been asked for. Meanwhile, there is a national study, I've given you 2 pages of it, that shows the same kind of data on a national basis. So I think we will have a good body of information analyzing the cost of various types of claims by various types of providers.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, Director Hall, looking at the information that you provided us on page 7 with the analysis of this bill, and it, I'd like you to expand a little bit on the overall workman's compensation cost increases. Without this bill, it'll be 4.5 to 5.8%. With this bill, it'll drop down to 0.8% to 1.2%. Can you expand on why that is a little bit?
Without the bill, there would be no cap on the fees, the provider fees that are charged to treat workers' compensation. Up until August 1st of 2007, there has been a medical fee schedule promulgated by the Division of Workers' Compensation, the Workers' Compensation Board. That fee schedule still dates to December of 2004. So that the fees have been frozen since that date. There would be a normal increase, say, in 2006 and 2007, because that fee schedule would have applied to 2005. Even without any kind, even if we had continued the cap, there would be a logical increase as the medical fees go up. So this is saying without any cap, they will go up reasonably to 5.8% max, I believe. Even with this cap, it's a moving the cap forward. I don't think anybody thought that it was fair to keep that freeze going on at that level into perpetuity. So there would still be an increase, although much smaller.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, in your professional opinion, how will this affect small businesses in Alaska? And this is truly the heart of, I think, a lot of the constituents from my district and around the whole state is the call for a little bit of relief in workman's comp. A lot of businesses have had to lay off their employees, make their employees get their own business license because they can't deal with this. If this bill, can you kind of give me, in your opinion or your professional opinion as the director of insurance, how small businesses would continue either to decline if their rates were to increase, or workman's compensation rates would increase 4.5% to 5.8% as compared to 0.8% to 1.2%, or at least medical compensation?
And I would, through the chair, Representative Newman, I would emphasize that this isn't premium rates. It's a piece of that. It's a component. I think that without this bill or something of this nature, we will likely see an increase immediately, because we can see from the analysis NCCI does, and they do the rate filings for Alaska. They are the statistical agent. They do the rate filings. I think we can anticipate seeing an increase immediately. We will also see an increase in the cost of workers' compensation, medical care, that will carry forward for a number of years.
Representative Gatto and then Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. If indeed all we did was, and I guess it's in here, but I'm not positive, all we did was take care of the CPI, is that what the bill does? He said, let's just adjust it.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that is what the bill does.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, we talked a little bit about the emergency room, and I think they're going to collect some fees. Are those fees capped? And then the next question would be, post-care, out of the room and where you just have long-term rehab, are those fees capped too?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that is my understanding. Director Lasanke from the Division of Work Comp is here, and I think he can more adequately address the fee schedules and what that caps than I can.
And then one more. If indeed a physician or a person involved in long-term care simply said, at that rate I'm not interested, would we be forced to pay the higher rate if no service was available, or would we send a patient outside, or have we not reached that situation where we simply had a refusal for care?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, to my knowledge, we have not had complaints about availability of medical care at this point. I'm sure there are some medical providers that may do that. I'm not aware of any. In my division, the complaints we receive from injured workers are not about the access to medical care, but rather the way in which their claim has been handled.
Okay. Representative Ledoux.
You know, a couple of years ago during my first session here, we went through this interesting exercise where we changed the medical tort system, capped punitive damages, and the reason for doing that was to make our state more doctor friendly, because we've got a doctor shortage in this state. And then I think this year increased the number of, at least in the House, I'm not sure what the Senate's done yet, the number of WAMI scholarships. And the reason for that was making this state a more doctor-friendly place, because we want to increase the number of doctors there are in this state. So I'm seeing this bill, which is continuing a cap in medical fees, and I'm wondering how that fits into this philosophy of making Alaska a more doctor-friendly place, where we encourage doctors to come and stay.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's probably not my area. I think we just heard Jim Jordan testify that the doctors do support this legislation.
I'd like to add at this point in time that I participated in several of the task force work sessions, not as a member, but as a participant. And I think part of the problem, at least from my perspective, is that we lost two of the people that were extremely active in it in November, being Senator Seekins and Senator Guess also. And I think I believe the framework for the task force is still in existence, it just hasn't been funded. Would that be correct?
That's my understanding.
Representative Ledoux?
I guess I'd like to ask Jim Jordan that question. If he's still...
You still with us, Jim?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am. And could you please repeat the question, Representative Ledoux? Chair?
Well, I was saying that a couple of years ago we went through the exercise of capping punitive damages to make Alaska a more friendly place for doctors to be. And then this year we increased the number of WAMI scholarships again to make sure that we had doctors here. And now we seem to be freezing continuing a freeze of the medical rates under workers' comp. And I was just sort of wondering how that fits in with this philosophy of making Alaska a more doctor-friendly place.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm going to preface my remarks with this, is that, you know, the Alaska State Medical Association represents physicians across the state. You know, probably in looking at our total overall membership, we have many, many more physicians that are employers and no different than any other small employer. However, we do have members that a large portion of their practice is dealing with injured workers. And I think that, you know, our interest, particularly in this bill and in dealing with, you know, any appropriate and timely change is, of course, from our association standpoint, is a balancing act. However, you know, I don't think that it is in opposition to, you know, our feeling that, you know, we wish to have an environment that is conducive to recruiting physicians up here. And I think that by taking a thoughtful approach to workers' comp reform, and in our testimony again, and you've heard this before, is that you know, we're really interested in looking at the data and helping look at the data. The medical association is represented on the Medical Services Review Committee. So you know, I think, you know, just in summary, we are interested in a balanced approach in looking at the system, and I think that by having a fair system that will help us meet those goals of recruiting physicians.
Follow up?
And you are with the Alaska State Medical Association?
Through the chair, yes. Yes, ma'am.
One more question.
True.
So I'm looking at this letter dated April 13th by Roland
Gower.
And that letter that I'm looking at doesn't seem to be a ringing endorsement of this particular bill. Am I missing something in this letter?
Well, I don't. Representative Ledoux, through the chair. Ringing endorsement, no, but I think you'll see a recommendation that it be amended to tie in some regular provision of such data, particularly to be reviewed by the Medical Services Review Committee. You know, that's important. And frankly, you know, our position is that, you know, we're guessing at what our members' reaction will be to this bill. And as I mentioned before, we have, you know, varied interests amongst our membership in this bill. And the production of that data, I think, is very important from not only the standpoint that, you know, I believe that the reform that was enacted in 2005 was supported by the Medical Association on the basis that we were going to get into a more objective look-see at the data and what's driving the cost, so that, number one, we determine which areas in which surgery is needed, if you will, and secondly, that we do it in a manner where we can do it with the scalpel and not the machete.
Follow?
So it's my understanding then that you, that the Alaska State Medical Association does not support the bill in its present form, is supporting some form of a CS on the bill or an amended bill. Is that correct?
Yes. Through the chair, yes. I believe that's a correct statement. We would like to see a tie-in to the production of data, and not only, you know, for now, but on into the future.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks. This is a question for Dr. Rollengauer.
Through the chair, this is Jim Jordan. Representative Gatto, Dr. Gower is out of state.
Oh.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. I thought I'd heard. It's my mistake. I'll pass then.
For the members of the committee that haven't had the pleasure of working with Jim Jordan, Jim for a number of years was the deputy director of the Division of Insurance prior to going over to the State Medical Association. I have found him to be extremely knowledgeable on workers' compensation issues over the years, among other insurance issues. Now, you want me to say that about you, Linda?
Sure.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Mrs. Hall, but also several for Mr. Jordan, or actually statements. The letter from Rollengauer, which I was very interested to read, kind of two things jump out at me about it. The last sentence says, ASMA urges you not to take action that will adversely impact an injured worker's access to care. But the letter doesn't say whether, in the opinion of the Alaska State Medical Association, this bill would adversely impact. So, you know, I'm not clear in my mind whether you support it or don't support it. In fact, you said in an answer to Representative Ledoux's question that we're guessing on what our members' reaction would be to this bill. So, with that in mind, I have another question for you. The last sentence on the last
schedules. One of the things that we cannot do, and again, I'm speaking in areas that are on the very outside edges of my areas of expertise. Director Lasanke can address this probably more thoroughly than I can. But we have in other areas of insurance, medical insurance, health insurance, the ability of the payers to negotiate fees with the providers. I think you're all familiar with PPO plans, with various discounted plans. They have an ability to go out and set up networks and negotiate fees, and we see employers negotiate fees. None of that is a tool that is available to the payers of workers' compensation claims, whether they be insurance companies or self-insureds, because that is prohibited under statute today.
Representative Ledoux.
Ms. Hall, why don't we, in an effort to end up with lower workers' compensation rates, why don't we simply cap the fees that the workers' compensation carriers can charge or lower those fees, lower the premiums? Why don't we do that, Ms. Hall?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think if we, I guess this will be worst case cynical scenario. If we cap fees that an insurance company can charge, that we're capping it below their actual cost, they will not be likely to want to do business in our state. If they know going in, they're going to be unable to recoup their charges.
So why wouldn't the same logic that we can't cap fees for the workers' compensation carriers because people are workers' compensation carriers are unlikely to do business in Alaska if they can't make a quote fair profit? Why wouldn't this apply when we're trying to make this a doctor-friendly environment and make sure that our injured workers are properly taken care of?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm not sure that I have seen the evidence. I see the rates that insurance companies charge. That's my area of responsibility, to look at claims cost and adjust rates accordingly. And in that process, I don't know that anybody has that kind of oversight of the charges and the actual cost of medical providers.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. One more question, Representative Gardner.
I'm still puzzled about the task force and how it had a date by which data was supposed to be available, and apparently it's something that has to be done manually. There was a statement made that the framework for the task force is in effect with the task force.
Chair Representative Gardner, I think the data and the task force are two different things. The task force did have meetings. They came up with recommendations and a report. The Medical Services Review Committee was supposed to bring back recommendations to that group regarding what they felt might be solutions to the problems that we're encountering with the medical cost. That group was looking for data. They have come to me for that data at this point, but not 2.5 years ago. So I think the task force did perform the functions as they were set out, and I can't tell you that it would or wouldn't be a good idea to continue that. I think that was a legislative call and legislative members along with various stakeholders. I mean, I frankly thought it was an excellent interchange of ideas and an attempt to get buy-in. Medical severity relates to cost. Severity is a measure of cost of claims. Now,
differing ideas about what needs to change, what doesn't need to change, and I think there's an overall thought that if you change something that benefits this stakeholder, it automatically penalizes a different stakeholder. And I don't think there was ever adequate time and discussion to come up with solutions that were acceptable to all the stakeholders.
So are we talking stakeholders or certain towns?
I can't answer that question.
We've got several more people in the room that would like to testify. Thanks again, that's all. I'd probably like to get out of the chair. But Rod Bennett.
I'll be brief because I know there's probably some questions that you still want to ask me and others, but we started this process some time ago trying to head off what I see as a very serious problem for small and medium employers if this legislation isn't successfully passed this session. And that's that with the repeal going away of the cap, there's no administrative method that I'm aware of that will put anything else in its place. And then insurers will be forced to pay charges for physicians in the hospitals, which would result, in our case, for hospitals, probably 25 to 30% higher payments for services rendered because we get big discounts currently in this program. And it's important to keep in mind we're talking just about medical claims related to injured workers' treatment for those injuries. So we say there's a cap that's being extended and increased by the CPI. It's only on those claims that are related to the injuries themselves. It isn't a cap on anything that physicians and hospitals do. It's specific to that population of patients and their specific injuries.
We went to Representative Kelly and said, you know, if we don't have a way to get there legislatively, what will happen is that the cap comes off in August, the charges are then what they pay by, and obviously the reserves that insurers have been collecting through premiums to pay for that medical care won't be enough to cover it. There'll be future adjustments in premiums, and principally to small employer or medium employers, because a lot of large employers self-insure, and they'll see some very significant change in their premium structure, which again, I don't think any of us want to see. The thing that has been holding up a solution, in my view, is the medical cost analysis. I served on the task force, and as you said, Mr. Chair, two of the three members were not there at the end of last year. The last meeting we had that Senator Seekins chaired was when we talked about the medical cost data and when it would be available, and that nobody wanted to drill down into making finite recommendations for permanent solutions till they understood what the medical cost increases were attributed to. We have some suspicions, but nobody had any hard data to be able to decide what to do, and that a general, you know, rate adjustment across the entire medical community wasn't appropriate because there were specific areas we thought were going up faster than others. We understood that that data would be available by this summer. I understand now it may be later than that. And then that would finally give us the information we need to make some recommendations. It's my understanding the task force is now out of business. That the task force is now out of business, that we were sunsetted. Senator Seekins had it extended for a year, and I think it's that extension is now expired. But there is a body that I think can finish the work once we have the medical cost data, and that's the Medical Review Committee inside the Department of Labor, which is an ongoing body, and most of the interested parties, I think, sit on that also, and that they could come up with the recommendations that need to be adopted so that next session, hopefully, we could have a real good discussion about where do we go with a workers' compensation program here for the long term. So my perspective and my membership's perspective, who are big employers as well as medical providers, this bill is very critical to head off a particular problem. We don't like extending this cap because we don't think that's the best way to be doing business. But absent it, I think there could be some very serious repercussions coming down the road if there's nothing to take the cap that's being repealed place. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Ledoux, no question? Representative Book.
Thank you. Could you clarify for me a point that you brought up? You talked about discounting workers' comp care cost. You're talking about a way of rating that care, that it is a different rate, that a different patient, no matter what the cause of that injury, is incurred. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's pretty correct. What we do is pay differently to different purchasers of care. There's multiple reimbursement arrangements that are agreed to by hospitals. In this case, there was a reimbursement methodology used by the Department of Labor and Workers' Compensation up until 2004, where they would take charges from all the hospitals and arrive at a per-day rate for any of that worker-related care that was provided in those hospitals for each day of care that they received. What Senate Bill 130 did was extend that for 2 years to give time to come up with a better way to do that. And what this bill does is extend that again, but gives a CPI adjustment for each of those 2 years so that we're still not operating off of the rates and the discounts that we were giving back in 2004. There's at least a slight improvement in that.
Follow up?
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. My concern there is that the level of care is the same for that particular type of injury and that type of payment as it is for any other type of injury. Is that correct? Is that what you're telling me?
Through the chair, the care remains the same. There's no difference in the care provided based on the reimbursement arrangements that are agreed to.
Representative Newman and then Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Beattie, could you talk to us a little bit about some of the initial problems that you looked at? The scope of your work as a member of this board, this committee, what solutions that you came up with to those problems and why you feel we need a little bit more time.
Through the chair, Representative, we had two groups working on this simultaneously. We had the Medical Review Committee in the Department of Labor, and then we had the task force that you created and was chaired by Representative Lynn and Senator Seekins. It focused principally on the health care question and trying to figure out what is underneath this rising health care cost and what can we do to come up with some solutions. There were a couple small steps taken in the beginning, but until we could get the cost data, nobody felt comfortable moving forward to come up with any further permanent recommendations because we didn't know the dynamics of what was going on. And so I've never seen specific recommendations come out of any of the legislative leadership of that task force myself. I think they were frustrated by the fact that they couldn't get the data.
And just real quickly, and again, thank you, Mr. Chair. That cost data will not be available until July of this year or later this summer, and so this is a primary reason why you need an extension of this.
Through the chair, Representative, that was my last understanding when Senator Seekins held his last meeting of the task force, was that it would be available earliest July of 2007. But I understand that there's some additional complications, and I've just heard that third party, and that it will be later than that before they're available. And again, we can't, no matter who's the body you assign to get underneath it and try to understand the dynamics of it, do that without some good data. And so that would mean to be later part of this year before somebody could start that work. And you know, whether that could be done in time for you to look at in 2008 session, I don't know.
It's questionable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Beattie, do I understand correctly that the association is not subject to the rate freeze that the bill addresses, rather you have a negotiated rate with the state that you use?
Through the chair, Representative, we would be subject to this bill, and what I was referring to is that in our the reimbursement arrangement between the workers' compensation program and each of our hospitals, that wasn't so much negotiated, but it was arrived at by the board in their process of setting those rates over the years. And it's a per-day rate, and it's different for each hospital. We do negotiate lots of rates, obviously, with other entities like employers. But we don't have as much individual negotiation authority when we're working with the state on their programs that we do with other entities.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm still puzzled because if you operate on a negotiated rate with large payers or with you know, individuals, not individuals, but with other organizations. On what is your, if you, and you're subject to this 2004 rate freeze, what was that based on, and what was the rate used for your base?
Through the chair, that was based on claims submitted to the Department of Labor for injured workers and a history over time of what those charges were, and then the board and the department had a methodology to produce a daily rate out of that, which we accept as payment for those services in full. And that's what was in place in 2004, and that's what was continued under the freeze for the last 2 years.
So given that you are used to doing business at negotiated rates, if this bill didn't pass, could you not simply negotiate something that didn't greatly increase the state's cost?
Through the chair, Representative, I couldn't speak on how that would play out in each of our, you know, we have 37 members. I don't know how each of them would approach that, but that would certainly be something that would have to be looked at. But I would guess that whatever they come up with would not be consistent throughout the system. And I don't know what the instructions from the Department of Labor would be to the insurers in terms of what they should pay when they, when a claim comes across for each of these injured workers' care. I don't know how that would work either.
But if the association has a position supporting this bill, if the bill didn't pass, the association could still choose to implement it in terms of their own billing for workers' comp.
Through the chair, again, the association doesn't make that decision. It would be individual members that would make that decision, and how they would handle that, I really don't know. And the bill goes beyond hospitals and impacts all the physicians that do business treating these patients as well.
But the individual members have made the decision to support the bill as it is currently?
That's correct, because they believe this is the best solution to get the time needed to make some permanent change to the program without creating a financial crisis for anybody.
Representative Ledoux, then Book, and then Gatto.
I'm not quite sure who to ask this question to, and you might not be the right person, but why don't all the workers, I mean, like, Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Premera and all the health care insurers, they negotiate rates with physicians and hospitals. And I mean, still, if you have Blue Cross, you can go to any doctor you want, but I mean, it seems like with the hospitals, at least, they've negotiated reduced rates. Why don't the workers' compensation carriers do that?
Through the chair, Representative, I think you'd have to ask the Department of Labor, Department of Insurance about that. It's a little different animal, and I don't feel comfortable answering how that works.
Could we get Ms. Hall up here to answer?
She's not with the Department of Labor, but we could
or
certainly.
Or the Department of Insurance.
Okay, with this, you get two for one.
Yeah.
Linda Hall, Division of Insurance. One of the reasons I think we can't have negotiated rates for workers' compensation is that you can't direct care. It's my understanding it's actually Paul's area. I watch the entities that we regulate. We don't regulate their fee arrangements with any provider. That's something the insurance company is able to do with the provider. You then, in health insurance, have in-network providers and out-of-network providers for which the health insurance carriers pay different amounts. But that is a choice, that you can go to an in-network or not, and there may be a difference in cost. And I would let someone else address the other piece of
that.
But for the state health care system, for example, I don't think that there are places that people are directed to go, but I know that it's, you know, a lower rate if you've got that health care insurance than if you don't have the health care insurance.
Even with the state insurance, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, even with the state insurance, you have in-network providers and out-of-network providers, and they are reimbursed, and you may be subject to a different level of copayment based on that. I would also make sure that you're aware, we don't regulate the state's health insurance program. We don't regulate any self-insured program. So there may be some differences in that also.
Thank you.
Representative Book, you were up next.
Well, my question was for the former testifier. Was there a question for these folks while they're up?
Is there any further questions for Paul?
Ron?
Can I ask this question?
You can ask a question,
sure. There was a piece of Representative Ledoux's question that deals with why we can't negotiate fees with providers, and it has to do with how health care is directed, whether it's employer or employee-directed health care.
For the record, my name is Paul F. Lasanke. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And I would agree with Director Hall. Under workers' compensation as it stands right now, under our laws, it is illegal to interfere with the selection of a health care provider by the injured. The injured worker is the one that has untrammeled control over who they seek out care from. So I agree. I think Director Hall is correct that typically when there's some negotiation, the quid pro quo is if you give us a lower volume rate, we can guarantee you that you'll get the volume of people seeking your services. And workers' compensation, a workers' compensation insurer doesn't have any control over that process other than to pay up to the required amount.
Thank you. I think we'll bring Rod back and finish up with him. Thanks, Linda. Mm-hmm. Representative Book.
Thank you. Mr. Beattie, in your former testimony, you said that the task force has been discontinued. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative, I believe that's the case.
Okay.
We've not had any meetings since, I think, September of last year.
So there has been no funding for this task force. It is not in force anymore, and there is no monies for that to continue. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's my understanding.
Okay. The other information that you provided was that there was data that was to be provided in July by that committee. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that was when we had this discussion at Senator Seekin's last task force meeting, that was the estimated date by which that would be available. But it's been my understanding since then that it'll be after that date, sometime after that date, maybe 4 or 5 months. But I think others here might have a better idea of that.
Okay, then the final question is then if the task force is discontinued and the information is even later than it was anticipated, who's going to deliver that information?
Through the chair, my recommendation would be the Medical Review Committee in the Department of Labor, which is an ongoing permanent body that reports to the commissioner and has the makeup of individuals that I think are appropriate to finish the work.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Providers can charge or often do charge different rates for the same treatment code.
Through the chair, actually the charges remain the same, but there may be discounts that are different for different employers that negotiate with different, you know, with different hospitals.
What I'm getting at is is there a choice if I could pick 10 providers and go to all 10, everyone would charge the same rate?
Through the chair, I understand what you're saying now. Their charges are specific to their hospital, so you would see different charges, you're correct, if you compare 10 different hospitals.
Right. And so if there's a discount, is the discount based on the current rate they're charging? And so I guess what I'm getting at here is that is it possible for a provider to raise his rates and then take the same 90% discount or 10% discount and do better than some other provider?
Through the chair, actually, the discount percentage I gave you is my estimate, best I could come up with, in terms of what the daily rate that the Department of Labor has set for that facility is versus the charges at the time, because it isn't really just a flat 25%. It's an estimate on my part, and it varies by facility. Could be a little less, could be a little more. But no, they couldn't raise their rates and see any improvement in what they're getting paid for the services that they're providing, because that's set by the Department of Labor.
If I continue, the discount is set by the Department of Labor, but not the rate. Am I correct or wrong?
Through the chair, That's not correct. What Department of Labor sets is a daily rate per per facility for each day of care that they provide to that injured worker.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thanks again. Next up is Wayne Stevens. Is Wayne still with us? Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Wayne Stevens. I'm President and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. As many of you know, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce has long advocated to lower the high costs associated with workers' compensation insurance. The current cap on medical costs enacted when workers' compensation reforms were adopted in 2005 was a stopgap measure. The cap will sunset this fall. This approach was in lieu of needed fundamental changes which address the system's cost drivers. Substantive reforms are needed to get at the quality of medical utilization and other factors such as frequency, severity of costs. These medical costs are the largest cost driver in the Alaska Worker Compensation System. When SB 130 passed in 2005, two committees were appointed, the Workers' Compensation Legislative Task Force and the Department of Labor and Workforce Medical Review Committee. Two important tasks of the committees were to look at program design problems and to study underlying reasons for medical cost increases. The committees were to develop recommendations to ease rate increases going forward. Committees were to have completed their work by February of 2006, and a medical rate freeze would sunset in August of 2007, replaced with a newly recommended rate fee. Task Force has not completed their work and have not submitted the required report. House Bill 228 would extend the medical rate freeze until March of 2009. It also includes an annual rate increase based on the Consumer Price Index. The extension will allow time for the committee to complete its data gathering and analysis and develop their recommendations. This will allow sufficient time for the legislature to address the underlying reasons for premium increases. The Chamber encourages your constructive work, and we are hopeful that the bill will move through the legislative process. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Representative Newman pointed out that our workers' comp rates were ranked 15th in the nation in 2000. Let's see, we were 15th in 2002, we were second in 2004, whereupon the rate freeze went into effect, and now we're first, ranked first. Does your membership believe that it's medical costs that are the driver here, or do you have any kind of explanation for why we would continue our climb even in the face of a rate freeze and that a rate freeze would reverse that?
It's our belief that with absent a rate freeze, the rates will escalate, presumably to make up for whatever perceived difference would have occurred in that ensuing two-year period and whatever CPI adjustments may very well be made. There are a number of costs, but medical costs are singularly the largest driver of workers' comp to our understanding. And I have a copy of that report, and Alaska is indeed at the top of the heap, a ranking certainly none of us should be proud of. Medical costs in Alaska are higher than other places in the nation, and so that just compounds that extension.
I'd like to point out that the workers' comp rates dropped approximately 11% this year, which was the first time in 7 years there's been a reduction.
That is correct.
So there may have been some impact there.
Go for it.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stevens, I believe you just stated that although there was a rate freeze, it does allow for an increase according to the Consumer Price Index. I'm assuming that they look at different costs around the state and how they rise, so that it's a freeze, but it does allow for Consumer Price Index increases. So it's not like they're a doctor or anybody in the medical field is going to be going into the negative on this.
It's not my understanding. Consumer Price Index is calculated by the Department of Labor. It's at the national level on a number of factors, energy, and I don't have the list in front of me at the moment, but it a number of factors, cost of labor, et cetera, to rate the level of inflation annually. And that would, as it captured in this bill, would allow the rates to increase based on that index.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Chair.
Paul Lasanke is signed up. We had him up briefly. I think we could probably finish up with him if he would still like to, if he missed anything.
I'm back. Mr. Chairman, I had signed up for questions. If there are any additional questions, I'd be glad to take a shot.
Representative Boot.
Through the, thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Lasanke, thank you for showing up today and putting up with this.
It was a pleasure.
It's my understanding we've lost a major component in our legislative process here with this task force. Was this task force in any way under your direction or supervision, or can you give us a way by which we can reenact this task force, get back on track here, and complete the job that was started with some sort of reliability?
Certainly through the chair, Representative Book. I would tend to echo what Mr. Beatty just said. The Medical Services Review Committee was established as an ongoing entity, and so it has not sunset with the bill. That committee does have a good balance, in my view, of healthcare providers and other stakeholders in the workers' compensation system. And so I think that when the data becomes available, that committee would be certainly willing to pick the issues back up, which it was unwilling to go forward with in the absence of the data. And I believe that that would give the entire legislature in that interim period, if it was a decision of the body that there should be a new workers' compensation task force, you would have time to institute one to receive the recommendations from the Medical Services Review Committee. Or, in the absence of such a task force, I mean, my advice to the review committee would be to submit it to the entire legislature or suspend through that methodology.
Paul?
The concern that I have was that we, in fact, get the information. If the task force is no longer in existence, and that we have requested this information, it's significantly later than it was advised it would be here, if, in fact, it arrives at all. So that is my concern, that this has been requested, and certainly the state has been advised that it was forthcoming. I'm just wondering the assurance that the data that we're relying on arrives.
Through the chair, Representative Book, I understand what you're getting at. My understanding is that the ongoing efforts to get that data into the system are going independent of the existence of the task force, that it will be done. But I understand your concern.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, under our current workers' compensation laws, are the price of drugs capped?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the price of prescription drugs is not capped.
Follow up?
Yeah.
So what price, what role does the price of prescription drugs perhaps play as far as our workers' compensation rates? Does anybody have any, do you have any idea about that?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't have anything specific to this state, but I've seen other studies that would indeed follow the drift of your questioning, which is that, it has a significant impact. It's a piece of the overall medical cost.
Follow up? Do you have any feelings as to whether or not the price of prescription drugs should perhaps be regulated, capped, maybe added on to this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't have any personal opinion other than to say that I think that that is an issue that the Medical Services Review Committee is free to take up should they choose to do so. And if I continue to have input on that committee, I certainly think it would be of interest.
Thank you.
Representative Newman and then Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Chair. Director Lasanke, thank you for coming to talk to our Labor and Commerce Committee. Certainly workman's compensation is probably the largest factor in most businesses. And because of that, I think that the way I'm reading some of the testimony that we've received is support to the extension on this is because they want to come up with a better solution than what they have right now. If they can come up with a better solution on that, how do you think it will affect workman's compensation in the future? And I'm looking towards, I guess I'd like you to kind of direct that towards competition in the marketplace for workman's comp, for our, because I think that that's been a major reason, one of the major reasons for the large increases is the lack of competition in the state of Alaska, lack of competition because of our high incident rate, because of our expansive nature of the state, because of our small population. Can you talk a little bit about how you feel if we were to get this information, a better mousetrap per se, that it could maybe reduce rates or how, what effect it would have?
I'll try, Representative Newman, through the chair. I certainly agree with you that everything that I have seen suggests that all of those are complicating factors in Alaska that make us a very somewhat unique economic entity. And I think that's actually what's driving some of the various concerns of the various stakeholders, that we not do something that appears logical on its face based on some experience in, say, a more urbanized setting, and then end up inflicting something on the less urbanized state of Alaska, which wouldn't work. And I'd say that the challenge that's before the Medical Services Review Committee or a task force or you as individual members of the legislature is that in many instances, one person's unacceptable cost is somebody else's revenue stream or their benefit. I mean, we're talking about medical costs as more than 50% of workers' compensation benefits. But that certainly is going to affect the next time the cash benefits are increased. People are going to weigh the overall impact on the system. So that is a bit of a conundrum. It is difficult for us to do things in a setting where we have a huge geographical area and a total population that's the size of, you know, a medium-sized city. And I know that Director Hall is doing everything she can to try and have more insurance companies compete for the business, but certainly everybody else that's a stakeholder in the process, whether a healthcare provider or a provider of prescription drugs or durable medical equipment, all these things go into this very complicated question that you're asked to address.
Representative Rammers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Director.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming and addressing us. I've listened with great interest this morning, and what other choice do we have right now? Is the conclusion that I'm faced with, although I'm mindful of the fact that if we delay and delay and delay, the increasing costs of providing medical care are going to swallow other options that are on the table in ensuing years. The question I have for you, and I just want to be on the record having asked the director of worker comp, you know, I sat through the changes that we went through, like many members on this committee, and was mindful that we swapped one black box that wasn't working well for another black box that I couldn't figure out what was in it as it related to the work comp changes. And although we have seen a softening in premiums, largely that's due to softening in the insurance market, I think, more than the significant changes that we made. Our Attorney General, General Kohlberg, when we were going through our confirmation hearings in the judiciary, he did not have a great deal of experience in other parts of the law other than workers' comp, where he has practiced for 25 years on behalf of employers and on behalf of injured workers. And I wonder if you might just for a moment, Mr. Director, tell us if there are any plans to work with the Attorney General to do a significant overhaul of the workers' comp system with somebody so knowledgeable on both sides of the equation sitting in the Attorney General's office once GEA has been addressed during this legislative session, because it seems to me we finally have somebody with appropriate expertise that can help us to disentangle this mess. Can you speak on that for a moment?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Ramirez. I was going to observe that the Attorney General does seem to be a bit preoccupied with some other legislation right now, oddly enough. But I am old enough to remember when the Attorney General started in workers' compensation, and I have worked with him over those many times in various capacities in and outside of government. and I would be very happy if you could make time to even just talk with us. But we do work with the Department of Law as we develop recommendations, but certainly we have a unique instance here that I would love to take advantage of.
Mr. Follow?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, perhaps next January, after G is out of the way and the agenda for this session has been completed, we can do an overview on precisely this subject and bring together workers' comp and the Attorney General and look to give such a significant expense component and at the same time a safety net for injured workers across the state of Alaska, a forum to better explore this program when we reconvene in January of 08. And I look forward to that dialogue, Mr. Director, and I thank you for all of your help.
I appreciate very much, through the chair, Representative Rammers.
Representative Booth.
Thank you. Director Lisanki, I would like to go on record saying I really appreciate all the time that you've taken with me in a very conscientious effort to educate me, and for all the time that you have dedicated to this and in this effort. I would like to also commend Director Hall for her efforts and the achievements that they have made in the last couple of years with the workers' comp. The one good thing that we do have is we have a carrier now that is in the black for the first time in a long time, and that if by increments we can make some positive changes, I think that we're perhaps on the right track here. So thank you for your efforts.
Through the chair, Representative Booth, thank you very much for your kind remarks. It's been my pleasure.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. We have one more person that would like to testify in the room, Barbara Huff, who I believe was a member of the task force, if I'm not mistaken. Good morning. Good
morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Teknis. I'm Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And yes, Mr. Chairman, you're correct. I actually was a member of the Labor Management Coalition, Workers' Comp Coalition group that worked for about a year and a half, had presented some recommended changes regarding the workers' comp. And of course, the medical component. I mean, when you think about, I guess, workers' comp, it's about injuries. Injuries relate to medical costs, unfortunately. It's like widget makers. It's where your cost is going to be. If you're making widgets, it's going to be a direct. If you're customer service related, that's, again, where your cost is. A restaurant owner, it's in your food and in your prep work there. As a member of the task, the coalition task force, that unfortunately, at least from organized labor's perspective, and I think from the management perspective as well, that worked together on the original workers' comp, we were somewhat disappointed when the recommendations that we had given regarding some workers' comp changes had been implemented. They were pretty much set aside, and the then Governor Murkowski brought in his own piece of legislation. And granted, I will for the record say that there were some of our recommendations that were incorporated into that particular piece of legislation. For the record, our coalition did talk about medical costs, and we addressed the pharmaceutical end of it. And I believe this particular section did end up in the bill, and I'd have to go back. It's been a little while since I've looked at this particular bill, but I believe going back to the pharmaceutical, and it was a question that Representative Ledoux brought up earlier. While it wasn't a big change, we did look at least utilization of generic drugs. We have not, and granted, I have probably just information that's been transmitted to me. I don't know of any workers' comp case out there where an injured worker has had trouble finding a physician or being treated with respect to whatever their particular needs were. Now, we have a bigger issue, and that goes back to the controversy with the insurance companies, which is a very, very different situation than what we're dealing here with the medical cost. So I actually was not planning on testifying today on House Bill 228, but I'm glad that I was at least participatory here, because we do believe that it is a very important piece of legislation. No, we do not believe it fixes the problem, but what it does is hopefully give an opportunity for some folks to get back together again and to start looking at hopefully making some changes out there that are beneficial to the injured workers, which of course is a concern that we have. We do not have a system that's set up where an injured worker in this state is directed to go to a physician, and we believe that's actually a good thing, not a bad thing. And granted, yes, because of that scenario, you don't have PPOs out there in the workers' comp program. So anyway, on the record, we do support the bill, and we would urge the members of the committee to move it out. Thank you.
We take a few questions.
I will attempt to answer them.
Probably more than a few. We'll start out with Representative Rammers.
Hi, Barbara. Nice to see you. I agree with you completely. You know, the two things are reducing costs for the employer and providing the best benefits for the injured workers. And one of the questions that we had posed in this committee to Director Hall earlier in the session was, if we're paying the highest premiums in the nation, does that conversely mean that we have the best workers' comp program in the nation? As she emphatically indicated, we do not. If for a moment briefly, if you would offer a little conjecture for the committee, had the provisions that the task force recommended been adopted into the work comp legislation, what do you think the horizon or the landscape would look like now relative to what we did before?
Well, I'll attempt to answer this. The task force recommendations were actually twofold. We had a bill that we would like to have seen introduced that would have addressed some of those cost issues out there. We also looked at a second piece of legislation coming in the following year that actually would have addressed the medical and some of the more contentious issues out there that, as a task force group, we were not able to get our arms around. And part of that, and I think the earlier committee, the medical review committee that was mentioned, is having a similar problem, and that's getting the information. Some folks will point at, we've got a problem here because of an orthopedic surgeons out here doing way too much work, or you've got your chiropractors out here doing this or doing that. And there really isn't the factual information that I truly do believe needs to be reviewed. We as a state and those of us in organized labor that negotiate labor agreements, medical cost, I mean, it is a thread that runs through everything that we deal with out there. When we're negotiating labor agreements, it's about the medical cost and how we cover that. Does it come out of wages? Does it come out of other areas in the contracts there? It is and has been an ongoing problem that somehow, some way, we need to be able to put our arms around without negatively impacting the workers. And I think, too, a fair and balanced perspective, recognizing where our physicians are within the medical field.
Thank you.
I'd like to do a follow-up on that. If the information became available, do you think the medical review committee would be the vehicle to use to analyze it and carry it forward, or what direction as a member of the task force, do you think we ought to pursue?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to believe that would be the case, yes. And
so we do have a framework if the information becomes, when it becomes available.
I do believe that to be the case, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. MSF, thank you for coming up and talking to us today, because it is important to me as to what organized labor has to say about this. You represent a lot of people in this state, or the views of a lot of people, and not just, you know, when you think of union, it's not just big businesses, but there's small businesses too that are still a union house. As a member of the Workmen's Compensation Legislative Task Force, it's interesting to me to note that although if memory serves me right, you weren't 100% in favor of Senate Bill 130, but you are in favor of the extension of the task force to look at the different costs involved here. Specifically, I think the cost, the needs cost data that we've talked about or we've heard from,
Could you tell us how that information would help you get this job done? Or do you think it's going to extend out that long? Or do you, I'm assuming that you would probably continue to be a member of this task force.
Through the chair, Representative Newman. Actually, I was not participatory on the legislative task force. We actually had and it's been a recognized, group.
Ad hoc committee.
There we go. We were never officially formalized, although I think if you take a look historically back in legislation that has been implemented with regards to workers' comp changes out there, it was actually the Workers' Comp Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee that made sure that those were implemented. So I guess I'm somewhat at a loss. I did not participate in this particular task force and have not been intricately involved in the direction that they're going. I can say for the record we do support House Bill 228 and hopefully looking at all of the information once it is gathered, we'll have an opportunity as well to make some comments on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Boot.
Barbara, thank you very much for showing up today and answering a few questions. Appreciate that. Former testimony showed that the task force has been discontinued. Is that correct? So when you're testifying to the fact that it's ongoing and that you'd be able to participate, is that correct or incorrect?
Through the chair, Representative Boog. Actually, I think there might be some confusion here, the group that I participated in was actually the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. The Legislative Task Force, and I don't recall, I do believe that there was a sunset date on that.
I believe it's 7-1 of this year. Can you give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, Linda?
February 1st, 2006.
Oh, okay, so we have a date. We passed it.
Okay.
Any further questions for Barbara?
If maybe I could just follow up on Representative Book. For the record, and we actually have not had a response, but there was a letter, I believe, back in January that was written by Vince Beltrami, who's the executive director for AFL-CIO, to Dick Cantnaw, the AGC director, suggesting that we actually might want to reinstitute the Labor Management Ad Hoc Group. And to the best of my knowledge, we haven't had any kind of response on that. But again, that's an unofficial group that has volunteered many, many, many hours in trying to get their arms around that situation. And the task force is something that's been out of our hands.
No follow-ups? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Well, I think I'll close it to public testimony and bring Derek back up again to tell us about the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, my name is Derek Miller, staff to Representative Mike Kelly, and I believe the amendment that you have before you is a simple amendment. Striking the language on page 2, line 3, for the Anchorage metropolitan area. What this amendment does is basically just allow for the adjusted change to be for the national CPI instead of the Anchorage metropolitan area CPI. There is no data available in 2004 for the Anchorage metropolitan area regarding the medical care component for the CPI. So this just changes it from the Anchorage metropolitan area to the national CPI.
Well, first off, are there any committee questions on the bill before we bring up the amendment? Now that we know what it is. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to adopt amendment number one?
Mr. Chair, I offer amendment number one on behalf of Representative Kelly. That would be delete the words "for the Anchorage metropolitan area" on page 2, line 3, and that would be for House Bill 228, version LS-250-773, backside C.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Objection noted.
I would like to speak to that. I can speak. Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I guess I'm just trying to figure out, okay, so you delete for the Anchorage metropolitan area, but it still isn't based on a statewide increase in the consumer price average, is it? Because you still have for all urban consumers. So how would, I guess I'm trying to figure out how that would work exactly. Suppose you deleted for all, what would be the difference between all urban consumers, the consumer price index, or if you did it on a totally a statewide basis, which would include all consumers, whether they're in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, or in the bush?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, in working with Ledge Legal on the differences between the national CPI and the Anchorage metropolitan area CPI, by simply just striking the language, we conform to the national CPI. As far as how it relates to the rural Alaska, I can't really speak to that. I'm not quite sure how this would apply or what the answer is to your question. I don't know if there's somebody available that might be able to speak to that.
Representative Rammers and then Representative Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I share Representative Ledoux's concern about reflecting a different inflationary schedule in the bush, particularly the article many of us saw yesterday about bulk mail rates going up. However, as it relates to this amendment, I don't think there's a great deal of difference between the CPI for Anchorage and the CPI for the nation, and that's the current language simply conforms the bill to the national CPI average as opposed to the Anchorage, and it's a small urban area versus a macro urban area, and neither of them really address the concerns that we have in rural Alaska. So I share the concern, but relative to which metric we want to use, I don't think there's a great deal of difference between Anchorage and the U.S. CPI.
Representative Newman and then Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I read the amendment, I think it probably addresses what Representative Ledoux is trying to get to, is making sure that we have a broader scope. And when I talked to one of the earlier questions that I asked, one of the people that were testifying went directly to that issue. They stated that this would look at Alaska pretty much as a whole. And I think that's probably a better way to do it, instead of saying just on our largest metropolitan area where prices are probably less. And it's not as effective as much. So I see this as more encompassing as a state as a whole in a good amendment.
Representative Ledoux and then Representative Gatto.
I guess I'm not seeing it as even taking the state as a whole. This doesn't even say for Alaska. So why are we doing this on an increase in the consumer price index for everybody all across the country? Why wouldn't we be doing it on an increase in the consumer price index for the state of Alaska? That's just really confusing me.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, regarding the whole index debate on what we choose to use or not, there is data available for the national CPI that I believe other states use as well, and we just simply don't have the data for Alaska, for the Alaska CPI. So this is, as far as I'm aware, other states use the similar adjustment when they adjust their workers' compensation rate, and I think it's appropriate to use for the state of Alaska as well. I don't know if that answers your question. But
I believe the sponsor told me it was the drafter's intent that it conform.
Correct. Correct, yeah. Mr. Chairman. Correct.
In other words, we don't have data on an increase in the consumer price index for the state of Alaska, period?
For the medical care component.
For the medical care component for the state of Alaska?
For 2003 and 2004, that data is not available. It is available in 2005 and 2006. There's simply, I believe, Director Hall referred to the data collecting on some of these indices, and depending on how much information is provided after that request is made through telephone calls or however it's obtained, if there's not enough data that's provided, then they cannot come up with an index. So in those years, in 2003 and 2004, there was no data, so we're conforming to the national CPI.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. I guess I'm looking to see if the amendment is good, benefits, or is not a benefit. Does it benefit the costs? Does it benefit the state?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I believe it benefits everybody. I mean, if this amendment was not adopted, technically the bill, you couldn't adjust the rates because there just is no data for 2004, and that's what we're working off of. So if the committee chose not to adopt it, I'm not sure how the Division of Insurance would be able to adjust the rates accordingly.
Do you remove your objection?
I'll remove my objection to the amendment.
Seeing no objection, the amendment passes. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would like to pass House Bill 228, version 25L0773/E from committee with
as amended.
With any attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection?
And individual
recommendations.
Seeing no objection, it moves on to finance. We're going to take a brief at ease, and then we're going to bring up House Bill 65, I believe. We're back on the record. It's 11:58. We've had committee members with previous engagements, and we're going to be holding House Bill 65 over until Saturday. And at that time, we'll be bringing it up when it doesn't conflict with finance, which I believe means the chance will probably be early on Saturday afternoon. But we'll get the notice out later on in the week when we're in a position to where we can notice bills on short term. If we're not under 24 hours at that point in time, I'll recess the Friday meeting and bring it up. But with that, we'll adjourn at 11:59. Thank you.